Hey everybody, welcome again. We are back. We are back with a Euro-focused edition here at Up Back Through. I am Eddie Prue, based in Seattle, Washington, and joined always by tactical master and just general football guru, David Cellini from Sweden. Good morning, David. We've taken a little hiatus. We've been busy with school and work and life for a little bit here, but it's good to be back on the microphone with you. Good morning and welcome. And how are you doing, man?
Yeah, thank you, Eddie, and nice to hear your voice again. Yeah, we had a bit of a break, a forced one upon us. But good to be back. Good to be back talking some football with you. And I'm all right. I worked for a few weeks after finishing my studies for the semester, and now I'm off for a few weeks, and a lot of football to cover. So we're on a break now with my team, but we have some football to watch on TV with the Euros being on. So it feels kind of weird now that this is the second day without any games after almost 2 weeks of three games a day, or even four at some point. So really good moment in the year, really, when we have so much football on TV every day.
It's the best, one of the best times of the year if it's a major tournament year, and yeah, get spoiled with three games a day, and then these days roll around where there's no games, and we kind of just twiddle our thumbs and wait for the knockout stages. So group stages are behind us, and dang, a lot of talking points. First and foremost, I think we gotta just shout out Christian Eriksen, man. That's not the way you want to start this tournament. And my goodness, man, what a scary moment. But we are very thankful that he is doing okay and that he's alive. I mean, that's the silver lining of this whole tournament so far. So, hopefully I don't know if he'll play football again. Highly unlikely, but we are thankful that he is doing okay. So, but beyond that, man, I think there's so many talking points, but let's just get your opinion on who has been the best team so far. I think this is going to be a fairly easy decision, but I'll ask you as if I don't know what I think you're going to say. So who do you think has been the best team so far, David?
I think there's been a few that's impressed me. I think Spain have played well, and they just should have won their group comfortably in terms of if you look at the performances they had. But you know, in the first two games they struggled to put the ball in the back of the net, and that meant that they drew the first two and then finished second, and they got themselves into the half of the knockout tree that looks a lot tougher than the other half. So they will probably be kicking themselves a bit that they didn't score against Sweden, and that they, for example, missed that penalty against Poland. But they've played really well and look like a proper team as long as they get their goal scoring going well. And I mean, they scored five in the last game, so they might be on the right track there. I think Belgium's been good as well. They've played all right, and I mean, they have probably the strongest attack in terms of the individual players they have in the tournament, alongside France, I would say, with De Bruyne looking up to his old tricks, and Lukaku is scoring for fun. So Belgium will be interesting to see now when they play Portugal in the next round. I was really impressed by Denmark in their two games after the Eriksen incident. I thought they played really well against Belgium, and then obviously lost that game. But then they were ruthless against Denmark. Russia. So they will. They're in the side of the draw where you feel like virtually anyone could reach a semifinal, and they play Wales. So they will have a good chance there. But for me, the team that you expect me to name here is Italy, and that's what I'm gonna do. I've been really impressed with Mancini's men, I'll go into the way they play here in a bit, but the most important thing that I wanna bring up here is that just you as a City fan as well, it's nice to see Roberto Mancini back at the big stage. I think he's just someone who brings a lot of class to everything he does, and what's your thoughts basically just first on seeing Mancini back at the big time?
Oh, it's great to see Mancini back. He's a cult hero at City. He was the one that, you know, brought us that title in 2012. I never get tired of seeing the replays of that video of him just, you know, celebrating on the sidelines. And he brought the initial real quality to City, the real belief. And he was the first, you know, manager that really took us to that next level. So a lot of love for Mancini, and should Pep decide to leave one day and Mancini is not retired, I think that he will be the man to return to City. But that's complete speculation and way too far off, not even really worth mentioning. But no, it feels great to see Mancini at the helm right now. And Italy's record is fantastic under him. I can't remember how many games they've gone unbeaten now, but they're doing incredibly well. Their squad is as deep and as strong as you could want, and they're playing some awesome football. So kudos to Mancini, and Italy are definitely for me the team to look out for in the knockout stages.
Yeah, and if we go into the way they actually play, then I mean, Mancini for me has never been this coach who would use a very dominant style of football. I mean, his City team was really good, and they used some interesting tactical patterns with Silva and Nasri playing either side of a four-man midfield and coming inside into the half spaces, and then they had the likes of Zabaleta and Clichy, you know, bombing on down the wings. So they had some interesting stuff going on, but they were also quite cautious at times, you know, dropped deep and defended from there and looked to counterattack at times. And his Inter team wasn't spectacular when he returned a few years ago. But I mean, if you look at the way his team play now, I mean, he's definitely been influenced by the likes of Sarri and De Zerbi, who we've talked about before, with the focus on passing from the back, on creating all these passing triangles and passing diamonds all around the pitch to dominate possession and move the ball quickly and find third man runs everywhere. And I mean, if we look at the structure, so he plays from a 4-3-3, where in attack, the left back, Leonardo Spinazzola, will push really high, whilst the right back, who's been Giovanni Di Lorenzo from Napoli in the last game and a half, because he was rested against Wales. He's more narrow, so they create a back three with the Chiellini, who played in the first two, Bonucci in the middle, and then Di Lorenzo. That's a back three. Then you have Jorginho and Locatelli, who plays as a double pivot in possession, and the third centre mid, Barella, will push up to play as a right-sided 10, you could say. And Domenico Berardi, the right winger, he stays wide, whilst on the opposite side, Lorenzo Insigne comes inside to open up that space for Spinazzola. So it's virtually a 3-2-5 when they attack. So they create a very solid base with the back three and the two centre mids. And then they have that five-man attacking line with Spinazzola, Insigne, Immobile, Barella and Berardi. And the main thing that they do is that they try to, first of all, they use the ball very cleverly. So they try and get the opponent to press them in central area. So they use a lot of short passes, a lot of combinations where they play the ball. You know, funnily enough for us, they use up back through combinations a lot. So they play the ball, they might play the ball up to a center mid to get pressure on them from behind. And then they play the ball backwards and then try and look to play through. Because when someone steps out to press you, they obviously leave space behind. And that's the space Italy wants to exploit. So, for example, they might play the ball into Locatelli, who might lay it off to Bonucci. And then the space that is opened up by a midfielder pressing Locatelli is the space they look to find someone like Insigne in. So they get players turned facing forward between the lines. And then they can then they can cause a lot of problems for teams, because then they have to react to the positioning of the Italian attackers. And it's very obvious that they often look to build up on the left. So they would have someone like Chiellini stepping out with the ball. They would have Locatelli and Jorginho overloading the left side of the pitch, with Insigne as well. So very technical players in short spaces, and they try and drag the opponent to that side. And then they quickly play out of that space into someone like Barella, who can then drive at the defense and put the ball out for Berardi, who will be 1v1 against a fullback. And he's very good in those situations. He's been behind a lot of the goals so far. And I think actually a lot of the goals in general have come from the right. So they've managed to switch the ball quickly and then attack from the right side. I mean, the first goal they scored against Turkey, when Berardi hit the cross into the, what do you say, the stomach of Demiral, the centre back who scored an own goal. That was one of those goals where they played the ball on the left. Locatelli switched it to Barella, who ran with the ball centrally and then played it out for Berardi, who was 1v1. We also have the goal Locatelli scored against Switzerland, when he first switched the ball wide right. Berardi took the left back on and then played it back across goal, and Locatelli scored. So they used the right side very, very efficiently in that way. And the other thing that makes them a standout team for me is the way they always look to play in behind. So when teams will try and press Italy, they will have to be wary all the time that the ball might come in behind them. So as soon as there's space to play into, someone makes a run, whether that's Immobile, whether that's Barella, whether that's Spinazzola, someone makes a run in behind to constantly push the team back as well. So they try and entice them to press them in central areas. And when someone presses you, they step up. And then that space, either between the lines or behind, they will look to exploit. We saw that against Wales, who tried to be really compact and stay with a high line. And Mancini, just after 7 minutes, was out there on the touchline screaming at them to play the ball in behind. So they're very vertical, which makes them an interesting team to watch, I think, because a lot of teams look to keep the ball. But Italy, what they do is that they actually try and be vertical with it as well, both in terms of their short passing in central areas to get players facing forward between the lines, but also to just quickly as quickly as possible get in behind teams, often using Bonucci's, you know, immense range of passing as a tool to actually do that. And they're very good out of possession as well, in terms of pressing and counter pressing, which I'll touch on in a minute. But just in terms of their attacking play, what have you seen that like, is there anything that you agree with there for me, or any players that you want to highlight?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, and there's I can talk about players all day on Italy's team. First of all, the mix of experience and just pure quality they have is awesome, because, you know, they're anchored by Chiellini and Bonucci, you know, 36 and 34 years old respectively, have played at, you know, virtually every major competition and have won pretty much everything that you can win. So to start with, that's fantastic. And then you have all these other players who, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't want to say they haven't had experience at the highest level, because they certainly have, but you don't see, like, you know, an attacking player that's really of the quality of, I mean, obviously like a Ronaldo or like somebody that's, you know, a real standout player, but you have players like Insigne and Immobile and these players who have been at, you know, huge clubs in Europe for years and who are, you know, have their quality. And then you have players coming onto the scene like Barella and Locatelli, who, even though they're, you know, just they're beginning to make names for themselves and they're achieving things. Like we said, Barella won, you know, best midfielder in Serie A last year. But, you know, they step onto a major tournament for the first time and they don't look out of place at all. And for me, the goal that Locatelli scored against Switzerland that you just talked about was, if you watch him for the entire duration of the play, he starts the play by hitting a full volley on his weaker left foot out to Berardi, which is a technical masterclass in itself. And then he just carries on his run just all the way into the 6-yard box where he finishes. So, yeah. Yeah, he, like we said, we've talked about him so much, so we should almost call this podcast the Locatelli podcast. But he is just outstanding, and I'm a little bit surprised at his price tag of being only about 40 million at this point, but I think it'll end up being a little higher than that. And it looks at this moment like he's probably set to join Juve. Unfortunately for both of us, he's been linked with United and City. I would love to see him in England. We just don't see a lot of Italian players make their way to England, so that's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the quality, the mix of experience and just pure, raw talent. And Jorginho is obviously one of the best midfielders in the world at the moment. So I have a tough time seeing who's going to break them down. And again, like you said, their vertical play, the versatility, the ability and the lack of, like shame, if we will, to play long sometimes. That's not, it's something that I get as a City fan, I sometimes get frustrated with that because there's no shame in playing long to get teams to just be wary of that, because then they'll have to respect that. They'll have to drop off some, and then you have the space to play in front. Then you can actually play how you want. So to vary it up like that, and to have strikers like Immobile and Belotti in against Wales, or I'm sorry, against was it against Wales that he played?
Yeah, it was Belotti played against Wales,
When
yeah.
they just switched the lineup up entirely, to have, big, strong, mobile forwards like that who can chase balls and challenge central defenders physically is deadly. So again, they can hurt you in a lot of ways, and they have hurt teams in every way. 7 goals scored, 0 conceded. I mean, for me, they just don't, and they don't seem to have any kind of like shaky, like nervous feeling about them at all. I don't see them like being upset by anybody at this point. So yeah, those are my thoughts on Italy. I think they're a hell of a team.
And I think as you said, it's going to be interesting to see when they come up against some, because, like, to be honest, Wales and Switzerland both went through here to the next round, but they weren't really the toughest opposition we've seen. And throughout this run, I think the toughest team Italy have played over the last 2.5 years is the Netherlands. So they haven't really gone up against the absolute big boys of the tournament. So we'll see how they do against those. But you mentioned the defense there, and that they haven't conceded a goal. And actually, I think they have the best, statistically the best defense if you look at expected goals against. I think England might rival it. I'm not entirely sure about the figures, but Italy's record is really good. And if we just quickly look at the way they defend as well, because I think that's crucial in understanding this team, because Mancini is not some kind of he's not someone with an ideology that football can only be played in this way. Mancini wants to win. Like Mancini, he's the Italian manager to win the Euros, or to use the Euros as some kind of a springboard to World Cup success in 2022. He's not there to just play nice football. He truly believes that this is the way to play, and we can see that because he's changed his tactics based on what he's seen other teams do. So he obviously believes in this very Sarri and De Zerbi inspired type of football. And I think this is very, very clear to see when Italy defend, because they press high. First of all, they press really high, and they use players who can press high. So they use someone like Locatelli, who's different to Verratti, who I think will play in the last 16, but we'll get to that. I think because Locatelli is very physical, Barella is extremely physical. He's got energy to run, for days and days. And then you have someone like Immobile, who's a really good presser. Berardi works hard. Insigne doesn't look like a hard worker, but he actually does. And then you can put someone like Chiesa on, who's an absolute machine in terms of running. And they're very aggressive and look to stop teams as soon as possible. So they look to press high and stop teams there and force long balls, because they know Chiellini and Bonucci will deal with those. And also they will try and force turnovers so that passes are made into areas where Italy are strong. So they might entice someone to play the ball into midfield, where they will push hard with Locatelli, Jorginho, and Barella. And then Italy can win the ball and counterattack. But if the press isn't successful, or if they feel that, okay, this is not the right moment to press, then they just drop as a unit inside their own half and defend in a very compact 4-5-1, and are very comfortable doing that as well. So it's not like they can only press high. If Mancini feels, okay, the best way here is to actually drop very deep and be defensive, then they will do that, because the most important thing for them is to get a result and keep a clean sheet and take it from there. But the thing that's been most oppressive for me is their counter-pressing. Because, as we said, like, they attack from this 3-2-5 formation, and the wide centre-back, so in the first two games, that would have been Chiellini and Giovanni Di Lorenzo. When Italy are in possession, they're instructed to move forward with the ball and to help support the attack, and virtually only Bonucci is left back on his own at the back. So when Italy have the ball on the left, Chiellini will move high with it, and Di Lorenzo, as the opposite, so the right side center back, will be a bit more reserved, so he will be alongside Bonucci, you could say. And then if Italy lose the ball on the left, Chiellini will not return to his position. He will be there to counter-press aggressively, and I call this counter-marking. So he's like, when Italy are in possession, he is also putting himself in a position so that when Italy lose the ball, he has an opponent straight away that he can press. So against Turkey, this was Turkey's right winger, Karaman, I think it was, the play there. So when Turkey won the ball and played the ball to Karaman, Chiellini would not drop back into defense because he's a center back. He would step up and press Karaman very aggressively from behind, and then you would have the other players around that area, so Spinazzola, Insigne, Locatelli, they would come and help. So Italy would all of a sudden have four players pressing one or two Turkish players. And then you would end up with situations where Italy could win the ball and then quickly pass their way through, given the quality they have in possession. So, and they've done that really well. And it's going to be interesting to see if they will be that aggressive when they come up against... they will definitely do it against Austria, because Austria is a good team, but they don't have the technical ability that someone like Portugal and Belgium will have if Italy come up against them in a potential quarterfinal. So if they play against a better team with better players to deal with that type of counter-pressing situations, it will be interesting to see if Mancini feels that's a strategy worth continuing with, because if that counter-press is beaten and then there's space behind with like Lukaku running onto you, I think we'll see Italy drop a bit deeper. But that's out of possession what I've seen as well, that I've been really impressed with. And I mean, in terms of their performances, they can go all the way, but I still think there are a few teams who might prove too strong, that have some players that would cause Italy a lot of problems. But yeah, it's a good time to follow the Italian national team, and hopefully we'll see them at least in a quarterfinal and a semi, and that would be a just reward for the style of football they play at this minute. And as I said, Mancini's done remarkably well so far.
Agreed. Let's talk about your homeland for a second. They've done really well, so I think it's only right that we touch on Sweden and what they've done so far. I'll let you talk about a few things tactically and what they're doing well, but really quick, if I could touch on Alexander Isak. I know we've spoken about him before, but he hasn't scored yet, but his contributions have been very good, and he's really made a name for himself so far at this tournament as a possible alternative for a really top club to sign a really top striker. Only 21 still, but he's already been all over Europe. He's at Sociedad now, but he spent time at Dortmund, and I think, as we've said before, he is destined for a big club and a big league, and he's been outstanding so far, in my opinion. But Emil Forsberg as well, with three goals so far. He's been great in the Bundesliga for several years now with Leipzig, and I love to see Sweden do well. If it's a tournament where the United States is not playing in, then I got to root for Sweden, and it's good to see them. It's good to see them finish top of the group and go on to the 16th.
Yeah, I mean, Sweden is a very interesting team because the foundation of them have always been the defense, especially since Jan Andersson became national team coach. But if you look at the underlying numbers this season in this tournament, they're actually not doing that well defensively. I mean, their expected goals against is quite high and among the worst of the teams that went through, which would indicate that they concede more chances than you would expect. And I mean, they were fortunate against Spain to get a point out of that one. Yeah. And then they did what they needed to do against Slovakia, but didn't really control the game with the ball as many Swedes expected. And then against Poland, they had some issues with a lot of things, actually. And Robin Olsen, the goalkeeper, had a really good performance. And, you know, aside from Forsberg's goals, he's been crucial, and they rely on him a lot to bail them out when teams come at them. And you know, largely Sweden have struggled with controlling games, controlling the opposition. They drop deep in a very solid 4-4-2, and they deny a lot of, you know, play in central areas, and they do that really well. And the counterattacking has been very good. And we saw when Dejan Kulusevski came on against Poland, what a difference he makes when he's on the pitch. And I think he must start in the next game against Ukraine. So he came on, had two assists, and basically won that game for Sweden. Otherwise, Sweden would have lost that game, because Lewandowski scored twice, and Poland looked a better team. But then Sweden would have finished third and played Belgium. Now Kulusevski's two assists, one for Forsberg and one for Claesson in the 94th minute, helped Sweden all of a sudden reach the last 16 as group winners. That's a really good achievement to finish first in that group. It's a tough group, but we'll see how they do. I think they'll beat Ukraine. I think Ukraine, I've been impressed with them in possession at times, but they've looked a bit open at the back, and I think Sweden will exploit that with the players they have. But I do think that Ukraine will have a lot of the ball, and Sweden need to find a way to stop, crosses coming into Yaremchuk, who looks like a, you know, proper number nine in the penalty area, and someone who can dominate centre backs with his physicality and his heading ability. So it's a potential banana skin, Ukraine. I think Sweden should win, and the country expects them to win, but it's going to be tougher than we think. But, you know, if Sweden can get to a quarterfinal, that's a massive achievement, and we'll play Germany or England there, so that's going to be tough. But getting to a quarterfinal for a second tournament in a row, because they did in 2018 as well, it's a massive achievement for the Swedish national team. So it's interesting here as well. Like, we have every time there's a tournament coming around, you see people all around towns with football shirts on. So the Sweden jerseys are out and flags are out, and we're never this patriotic, I think, other than when it's football going on. And, you know, people who will sit around and say that football is just a stupid game for 11 months of the year suddenly turn into the biggest supporters. So it's interesting what football can do to a country, and it just highlights the culture movement that football really is. So for Sweden, this is an exciting time, and we'll see how they do on Tuesday. But yeah, a really good performance so far to get this far.
Yeah, and like you said, Kulusevski is a outstanding player, outstanding young player, and he's been showing it for Juve, and he definitely showed it against Poland. Like you said, came off the bench and really just single-handedly created those two chances that led to goals. And yeah, outstanding player to watch. But anyway, those are the two teams that we wanted to highlight a little bit for the Euros. And there's a lot more we could touch on, obviously, but we'll keep it brief for now. And just we can look at those two teams heading into the last 16. And I guess the only thing left that I really want to talk about is back to England, back to the Premier League. Tottenham can't find a coach. What are they going to do, man? I think, you know, it's funny because we talked about the Italian coaching carousel that's going on, you know, and now there's even more developments. it's funny, if you want to talk about Gattuso and what's happened with him, you know, like that's just hilarious. But the thing that's funny to me is that he interviewed, you know, he talked to Tottenham, and afterward, he turned them down. And then afterward, I heard he sent a text message to Lorenzo, to Insigne, and said, "Oh man, Tottenham's a mess." So it's not looking good for the North London club at the moment. So I frankly don't know who they're going to go after next, except for maybe, you know, Graham Potter, or I don't know. I'm out of ideas for them. Maybe circle back to Ten Kata again, even though he's just signed a new contract. But yeah, it's difficult to say what's next for them, especially with the rumor mill surrounding Harry Kane too.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting which coaches they actually target here, because they obviously employed Fabio Paratici as the new sporting director, who was at Juve before. And as soon as he came in, you see that they are linked with coaches who worked in Italy. So Paolo Fonseca was, you know, apparently very close to signing, and then that fell apart. And then they targeted Gattuso, which is an story in itself, that he left Fiorentina after, I don't know, 15, 20 days due to some issues he had at that club. It's just, and now Fiorentina can't find a coach. So they've tried with a few, and they might now look to Paolo Fonseca to make this go full circle. And yeah, it's Graham Potter has been linked, but I mean, if they really wanted him, they would have sorted that, because that's an easy deal to make when you're in England already. It's not looking good, because I mean, we're almost in July, and I know they have obviously a lot of players at Euros, but I mean, preseason training will probably start for those that aren't there in just a few weeks here. So it would make sense for them to have at least know who will be the coach when those players rock up to the first few sessions. I don't really see who else they've been linked with. I mean, last thing I saw was Gattuso, and now he's not going to happen. So, you know, I'm very intrigued to see what happens with Tottenham. Has there been anyone else linked? I mean, Potter's been linked kind of, you know, quietly all through this process, but is there anyone else?
Well, I know, you know, long time ago, it looked like they were really going to try for Nagelsmann, but that was always a long shot. He was always, I don't think he was ever going to, if he was going to go to England, it was going to be for another team. But no, I really don't know where they're going to go from here. I think Nuno Espirito Santo would be an interesting option, just given his ability of man management. But again, that's just speculative. But I really don't know. I really don't know where they go from here. So, yeah, best of luck to Tottenham. But hopefully Harry Kane does force through a move. I know he does. You know, I've always said that he deserves a shot at titles, at trophies, and I would really love to see him playing in front of Kevin De Bruyne. I think Kevin De Bruyne would probably have 35 assists in a season if he had a striker like Harry Kane ahead of him. But it's tough to say. It's tough to say what will happen, you know, financially. You know, the prices that get thrown around for players like that are just insane. And, you know, even though City have the money that they have, doesn't mean they're just going to, you know, go insane and pay, you know, above what a player is worth. There's other options. And I wouldn't be totally devastated if we just, if we did give Gabriel Jesus and Torres. Now, I think, you know, there's been a lot of shouts to play Torres in the middle, and I don't think that's the worst idea in the world. He's played there, he's played wide. It's always been difficult to tell exactly where he's best, but I think he is a natural goal scorer. I think he could be used as a number nine. So it's going to be interesting to see what we end up doing for a striker, which is what we've been shopping for the most. But yeah, no, it's going to be a fun transfer window when the Euros end. And I hate when transfer speculation goes on during a tournament, you know, it never sits right with me. It's like these players should be focusing on the tournament at hand. So yeah, anyway, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But anyway, anything else you want to touch on tonight, or any other noteworthy points that you want to make?
Not really. Just going to be interesting to see these last 16 games of the Euros. And then, you know, I hope that that we see some good football. There's definitely one half of the tree looking very strong, with the likes of Italy, Austria, Belgium, Portugal, France, Switzerland, Croatia, and Spain. So that whoever comes out of that half will definitely be a favorite going into the final. And I mean, if I'm Danish or from the Netherlands or English or German, I would fancy my chances at getting to a final as well. I mean, the Denmark team might just have an outside chance to actually get into a semi. And when you're there, you never know what's going to happen. So it would be a fantastic story if they would go all the way and reach a final after what happened on the first day. So it's going to be a very, 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 very interesting few days coming up starting Saturday. And yeah, hopefully we'll see some good football and see these teams gel even more as we go further into the tournament.
Absolutely. And on that note, let's send our love and thoughts to Christian Eriksen and his family. But yeah, it's been a great tournament so far, and who knows what the last 16 holds. So there you have it, folks. Thanks for tuning in once again. We will catch you on the next episode of Up Back Through. And once again, don't forget to check out all the tactical pieces that Dav has been putting up on the blog at runningtheshowblog.wordpress.com. And thanks once again for tuning in, and enjoy the rest of the Euros. So yeah, good night, everybody.